You guys sit so far back. It's like you go into class and you're like, hey, you guys come closer. And I was like, nope, this is my zone. So you stay in your zone and I'm going to stay in my comfort zone. And we're going to learn about Jesus this morning. Specifically, we're going to learn about how God is always working even when we don't see it. We've been working our way through the covenant story of the Bible. What's a covenant? Unbreakable promises. There we go. What's a covenant relationship? Covenant relationship. That's what God is inviting us into. That's why we're studying this. That's why we're going through this. We've been working our way through the Bible. What section of the Bible are we in? We were in Daniel, and now we're going into the book of Esther. Good job. What kind of book is that? History. Esther is the last book of the historical section of the Bible. And so that's what we're going to look into this morning. Last week you learned about Daniel. Didn't my sister do a good job? I think she did a good job. I enjoy the fact that we have live streaming services because my heart is here, but sometimes my brain needs a break, but I can still check in, and it's not quite the same, but I'm thankful for a God who's the same no matter where we are. Amen. So we're continuing on in our study of the historical books. We say study, but this is really a snapshot. We're not studying. Hopefully you're studying at home. That's the beauty of God's word. You can take it anywhere and everywhere that you go, and you can dig and you can study. You don't just have to do it here in this building, in this sanctuary. But we're really glad that you're here this morning and that you are studying with us. So thanks for coming. Picture it. It's 539 BC and the great Babylon has fallen. Its massive walls now lie in ruin and ashes, smoke after destruction. Remember Daniel? He was the tough Jewish, righteous Jewish leader who served four kings. He served from King Nebuchadnezzar through King Cyrus. He read the writings on the wall. Remember the hand that wrote? He deciphered the message. God gave that to him. He survived the lion's den, which remind you, why did he go to the lion's den? Because he prayed. Because he prayed. You think about Daniel, and you think of all he did, and he really inspires me and challenges me when I study him in the scriptures. And I remember one time going through the scriptures and just seeing, because if you read about him, he was very skilled, right? And we think, well, how do we get skilled? We go to school. That's how we learn. That's how we study. But the scriptures actually tell us that God gave him wisdom. God gave him the head knowledge. God gave it to him. And you say, okay, well, where's mine? And I'll never forget when God spoke to me, impressed in my heart, when you commit like Daniel committed, I'll give you what Daniel had. That was heavy. That was a lot to think about. But that's what God's after. It was Daniel's faithfulness that God saw. It was the fact that he said no to forbidden food. It was the fact that he said, no way, I'm not bowing down to those idols. He didn't give in to what culture said was the thing to do. He said, what is God asking me to do? And that was the standard that Daniel lived his life, because he was a committed man of prayer. Prayer was a priority. And when we make prayer a priority, it prioritizes our life. Who knew? Daniel figured it out. He did it God's way. And because he was faithful, it didn't just save him, it saved an entire group of Jews. An entire group. You see, King Cyrus freed them and said, hey, you are welcome to go home to Judah. And there were some Jews who said, I'm out of here, and they took off. And there were others who stayed in Persia. And some of them were faithful in their covenant relationship, and some of them were not. But those who were faithful, they were faithful to God and very intentional about protecting their families and protecting their beliefs and not living a blended life into culture. You see, Nehemiah, he rebuilt the wall, and Ezra brought God's law back to the people and made it a priority. And now we're jumping into an area called Persia. Persia was a huge empire. Like, it had Turkey, Iraq, Iran, Pakistan, Jordan, Lebanon, Israel, parts of Egypt, Sudan. It was very large. It was probably the largest empire at this time. And we're introduced to a man named Mordecai. Do you know who Mordecai is? Who is he? The uncle of Esther. I love this class. You guys are so smart. The uncle of Esther. He was also a descendant of what king? He was a descendant of King Saul. King Saul. Yeah, I was a little surprised. And I was really hopeful, because sometimes we get discouraged about where we come from. Well, I'm just a rivist. I'm just a brown. My family is doomed because of who they are. But when I look at Mordecai, I see hope, because he was a descendant of King Saul. Somebody in Mordecai's family. Okay, let's take a vote. Do we say Mordecai or do we say Mordecai? Okay, Mordecai. Someone else said Mordecai this morning, and I was like, I don't know. CCA. We're going to blame it on CCA, Sister Rossi. Mordecai. It takes a strong family to raise children who can serve God in a strange land and stay true and faithful to their faith. It is possible. It is possible. And when I look at Mordecai and I think about his life, I have even more hope for today, because we have his spirit that dwells within us, that empowers us even more. And Mordecai's family seems to have been the family that was strong in their faith, because over 100 years have passed since his family was taken captive, and now here he is. And Mordecai served, like Daniel, in the palace. I did a little looking to see and to understand, and he didn't really have a position of prominence, but he served in the palace. While he served King Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus? What are you saying? Ahasuerus. See how much fun you can have reading these? Or we could go with King Xerxes. Have you heard of him? Okay, so this is the same person that we're talking about. And King Xerxes promotes a guy named Haman. Who is Haman? A what? A bad guy. I thought you said the actual, like, what he was.
Oh, no.
But he was. He was a bad guy. He was from Agag. Do you know who that is? The Amalekites. Have you heard of them? Saul was supposed to wipe them out, did he? He didn't do it. If Saul would have listened, this might not have happened. But God can redeem our mistakes. And here in this story, we see that begin to happen. But Haman is promoted by King Xerxes, and he becomes number two in the land. And so he thinks he's due some honor and some respect. And the king's like, here he is. This is my guy, and I want you to respect him. And Mordecai says, nah, I don't respect that guy. And he refuses to bow to him. Now, some people say he didn't bow because the only person that you bow to is God. But I would say the scriptures don't tell us his motivation. But it gives us some information about who they were. And these are like arch enemies. They don't like each other. So could it be that he just was like, I don't like you? Or could it be that he saw the character or lack of character in this man? We don't really know. So we're not going to stretch it and say that it was this way or it was that way. But it's something that we should consider as we're looking into this story. So Mordecai says, no, I'm not doing it. And the king's men that are around him are like, don't you understand? Don't you understand? The king said that this guy's the guy and you should. And he's like, no. And the interesting thing is, if you read this through the account, the record that's given here, it seems like people are constantly like tattling on each other in this story. Hey, king, did you know that that guy won't do this? And they just like complain. And it's constant, it's repetitive when you read through here. So there's hope, parents. So Haman finds out, he didn't even know, he finds out from his servants that this guy Mordecai isn't bowing down to respect him. He didn't even know, he was oblivious. Thank goodness for tattletalers. Now he knows and he's furious. And he's like, what? Does he know who I am? Like, he's upset because this guy's showing me no respect. And so he's like, well, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go after him. But I'm not just going after him. He's a Jew. And we know how well they get along. And so he begins to develop this sinister plan that, you know what? I'm going after all of them. But he's such a coward that in Esther 3, 8 through 9, it says that Haman said to King Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered. There's these people in the kingdom. He didn't say there's Jews. There's a certain people scattered and dispersing among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other peoples, and they do not keep the king's laws. He wouldn't bow to me, so now he doesn't keep the king's laws. He stretched it. Therefore, it's not fitting for the king to let them remain. That's harsh. If it please the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who do the work to bring it to the king's treasury. The king's like, okay. It appealed to his pride as well. He's like, who are these people? Who are these people? I agree with your plan. Let's take them out. And so he signs the decree. Now, when a decree is signed, there is no changing it. That's it. We don't wait for the next king to come in. We don't wait for the next person to change it. It's a done deal. Esther 3:13 says that the letters were sent all through the country. This is the beginning. If you read in the scriptures, it talks about essentially it's like being in January and it's saying, hey, on December 13th, we're taking out the Jews. This was a genocide that was planned. That's what was going to happen. And so they began to distribute these letters. And these letters were going out amongst the people. And Mordecai heard what had happened, and immediately he was stricken with grief. He understood what this meant. This remnant of Jews that was here in Persia would be wiped out. And he was so grief-stricken that he tore his clothes, and he put on the ashes and the sackcloth, the scriptures tell us. And he basically cried throughout the city. I think of how David cried and rejoiced and danced in the city. This is the same expression of emotion, but now Mordecai is doing that in the streets. And he is so grief-stricken with the decree that has been put into place. Esther chapter 4 talks to us about that. Where's God in all of this? Hasn't his people suffered enough? Perhaps many of the Jews, as they begin to read this, can you imagine? That would be like us waking up and seeing it posted all over social media. We're taking out all the Christians. Get ready, because December 13th, we're wiping them out. Can you imagine the confusion, the hurt, the struggle? What would happen? So this is what the people are going through. And Esther finds out that her crazy uncle Haman is in the streets and he needs clothes. He has no clothes. What's wrong with this guy? You see, she was in the palace and she was isolated from what was happening. A Jew herself, she had not yet heard what had been decreed. So she's like, okay, I need to understand. She wants to clothe him. She wants to take care of him. But she also wants to understand. They're like, now her servants are telling her what's going on. Hey, there's this decree that went forth. You see, nobody in the palace knew that Esther, this chosen queen, was a Jew because she had kept that little secret in her back pocket as her uncle had encouraged her to do. So they're telling her about what's about to happen. When I was going through this story and reading the record of it and thinking about how that decree was signed, and it was issued, There's a scripture, Esther 3:15, and the last words caught my attention. It said, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. So the decree went out. They said, we're taking out the Jews. And now the people, not the Jews, the people were like, what? We're taking out the Jews? What's wrong with the Jews? You see, these were people that they lived with. These were people that they rubbed shoulders with. These were people that they did business with. And they knew of the testimony of the Jews to the point that they were like, why would the king issue this decree? What's going on? So they were just as confused as the Jews were confused. Lots of confusion going on. Many times, as believers in Jesus Christ, we will be scrutinized. The spotlight will be shined on us for one reason or another. And who we are doesn't emerge in that moment. It's who we've been. And I believe that the faithfulness of the remnant spoke for itself amongst the people as this decree went out. You see, the truth of the matter is that all of us being in covenant with God, it marks us. And eventually, it's going to require us to make some difficult decisions. You see, a lot of times we're marked and we feel like that's a mark of safety and things are just going to be easy and I'm just going to ride it out in the blessings of God until I get my cloud in heaven. But eventually, someone will be offended. Eventually, the enemy will launch an attack. And eventually, those of us who are marked in covenant will have to make a decision. We'll have to make the choice that we're going to stand up and be counted, or we're going to compromise our identity. When Esther was first chosen to be a part of the beauty pageant for the queen, or the king, the queen to be, keep the story straight. The book of Esther is 10 chapters. You can read it in one sitting. I highly encourage you this week as you go through devotions to read it. Read it. And look, there is no mention of God in the text. But you can see his fingerprints all throughout the story. You see, Esther had been chosen for a very bad king to be his queen. She was an orphan who was exiled. She had been raised by her uncle Haman. And God placed her in the palace. She didn't know why. She didn't get asked to go. She was sent. She was forced to go into the palace. Mordecai kind of counseled her. He coached her on the side. And he told her what she should do, what she shouldn't do. Don't tell them you're a Jew. Just go in. Just do what they say. See, Mordecai trusted God's plan. He trusted that God knew what he was doing. And he trusted that God could use Esther, even when Esther couldn't see herself exactly what God was up to. The period of time, a couple years, allowed Esther to gain the favor of the king. And so now here we are in a time, for such a time as this, that Esther has an opportunity before her. You see, Mordecai says to her in chapter 4, you can read about it, and he talks to her and says, hey, listen, don't think that just because you're in the palace, you're going to escape. You will be marked. You are a Jew. There is no escaping this. You will be wiped out. Your father's house will be ended. It's going to happen. Or maybe, just maybe, there's a reason. There's a reason why you've been placed here. Maybe you need to go talk to the king on our behalf. And Esther's like, whoa, wait a minute. You want me to do what? Now, you would think, being the wife of the king, that she could just go talk to him. Wives, can you imagine? She hadn't talked to her husband in 30 days. 30 days. I don't know how many times a day I talk to my husband. Sometimes I try to count it, and I'm like, forget it. It's a text message. It's a phone call. He's always like available, and I can just go before him. I can talk to him if I needed to, you know, to work something out. I'm like, hey, babe, I need to know, like, blah, 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 help me understand this. Or, hey, babe, look what I built. You know, it's just constantly this interaction. That is not how it was here. And she knew the law, and the law said that if you come into the presence of the king unannounced, you might not leave the presence of the king. And this was a man. This king was an evil man who was not known for his kindness to his wives. He was not known for his kindness to people. And Esther, having been in the palace for years, knew this. And now Mordecai is saying, hey, just go talk to the king for us, Esther. Just ask him how he can help us. And she's like, no, I'm not so sure about this. I think I would sit in Esther's shoes and say, I'm not so sure about this. But Mordecai did not go easy on Esther. His response to her hesitation is in Esther chapter 4, verses 13 through 14. It says, and Mordecai told them to answer Esther. Remember, this is coming through people. So this is like the game of telephone. So I have to wonder how it ended up to Esther, but she got the message in the end. Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Mordecai's words hit Esther hard. I'm sure she sat there for a moment and she pondered on that. And then she made her choice. She chose to do what covenant people do. She called a fast and she requested that her people fast and pray with her and for her. She resolved in Esther chapter 4:16. She sent this message to Mordecai, and she said, go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me. Neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night and day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. She didn't pretend that this was going to be easy. She recognized and she understood the difficulty of the task that sat before her. She understood the risks. I'll go, but I'm not going unless you pray and you fast for me. Because the only way I'm going through this is with him. The only way I can do this is if God goes first. Oh, the places we would go if we would follow. The Jews' enemies were trying to destroy them. They were trying to wipe them off the face of the earth, which would break God's covenant. God said what in his covenant? What was part of his covenant to Abraham? Yes. His descendants would be as many as the stars in the sands. That's a lot of people. And that would continue. And so here in this moment, they're facing genocide. What a vulnerable position to be in. I've never been in that position. I feel like I've been in some hard positions. I've been in some emotional positions. I've been in some positions where I've had to really think through some things. God, are you sure that's what you said? But never was it to the point where I knew that my life was on the line. Maybe it was going to be uncomfortable. Maybe it would be a little bit awkward. But never at this degree. So Esther and her people pray and they fast. And then Esther, like a good wife, knows, I just got to cook him a really good meal. Get him happy, then we can have some conversations. So she does that, and she invites the king, and then she invites Haman to come to this. Now, before we go into that, there is a part of the story. Again, I highly encourage you. The whole purpose of these lessons isn't to give you everything in the lesson, but it's to give you enough that you're like, hey, I want to go search that out. Go search it out. Go study it. That's what the word is here for. So remember Haman and how much he hated Mordecai and the Jews? Like, he was so miserable when you read this in the scriptures. He was just miserable. Chapter 5 ends with him whining and complaining to his family and his household about how this man Mordecai just won't give him the respect that he needs. He just won't recognize who I am. He was a very self-centered man. And so in his miserable hate, he built what? The gallows. For who? Say it again. Mordecai, there it is. He built it for Mordecai. And he said, I'm going to get revenge on this guy. And I'm going to come up with a plan. And I'm going to figure it out. Remember how I said God's fingerprints are all over this story? Chapter 6 opens up and it says, that night the king could not sleep. What do you do when you can't sleep? Breathe. I hope you breathe when you sleep, too. Read. Oh, apparently I can't hear again. Read. Yes. Well, I think there's a lot of things that you could do. I mean, sometimes we get up and sometimes we do something because we realize, you know what, I'm not going back to sleep. But that night, the king decided to have the Chronicles read to him. And it just so happened that the Chronicles that were read to him told the story of this guy named Mordecai who found out about the plan. He found out about a plan to kill him. And Mordecai saved his life. And all of a sudden, this king is like, hey, I should recognize that guy. He saved my life. I should give him a reward. That the wicked, evil king Xerxes decided this on his own? I don't think so. God was moving behind the scenes, bringing to remembrance and saying, hey, you should do something. God's always speaking. The question is, are we hearing him? So the king's thinking about this, and I don't understand, but all of a sudden Haman shows up on the scene. And the king's like, who's here? And his servant's like, it's Haman. He's like, bring him in, bring him in. Hey, Haman, what would you do? What would you do for this guy? Like, how do I show him honor and dignity? And Haman's like, ooh, the king wants to honor me. I know what you could do. Parade him through the streets. Celebrate who he is. So he gives this elaborate plan that he thinks is to honor himself. And the king says, I love that idea. Go get Mordecai and parade him through the streets. Can you imagine? I would love to have been a fly on the wall. The look on his face when he realizes this is not for me, Mordecai. I mean, he was getting ready to go to the king and say, hey, there's this guy and he needs to die. And now I got to celebrate him. What God can do in a moment. If we would just trust him, we could see it. We will see it when we trust him. So this is where Haman's at. And I can just imagine a look on his wife's face when he comes home and he's like, so I went to the king and I was going to tell him and I have this gallows built and I was going to do this, but then you wouldn't believe what he made me do. And the scriptures tell us that she and his household realized you're not going to win against this guy. You're not going to be able to fight him. They recognized the power that was with him, the power that was moving. So Queen Esther invites Haman and the king to come to the banquet. And the king's like, what is it that you want? The king knew. She has me here for a reason. What does she want? She goes, I want you to come to another banquet. Now, I don't know. Maybe she was just reading the room and it didn't feel like it was right. Maybe she got nervous and she was like, I have an opportunity, but I'm not really confident yet. So she said, I'll just feed him again. I'll make his second favorite meal and we'll do this again. So Haman goes home and he's celebrating. Guess what I got to do today? I went to banquet with the king. And I was the only other honored guest. Can you imagine the size of this man's head? So the second time, they go in to banquet. And the king's like, what is it that you want? And now Esther feels the prompting in her spirit. The prompting that says, King, my people will be destroyed. And the king's probably like, what? I mean, any enemy of the queen is an enemy of the king. What do you mean? He's like, what are you talking about? And chapter 7 talks about how he's like, who's the one? Who's the enemy here? And imagine the horror on Haman's face when she points at him and calls him out. And the king is just furious, and he leaves the room, and he's thinking, this is my right-hand man. How could he do this? And then he comes back in, and the scriptures say that Haman was basically pleading for his life, laid out on the couch, and the king's like, what? What? He thought he was making an advance at the queen. How would he do this in my house or with me being present? And now the king is just absolutely furious. And what happens? He sends him out to the gallows that Haman had built. And his life was taken. Sometimes we feel trapped about what is around us. The cards perhaps that life is dealing us and we don't understand. But God can always redeem any situation for his glory. He can do it. And so what happened after Haman was hung is there were some conversations that took place. And there was some thinking about, hey, wait, I can't undo what's done. December 13th, or in this, it's Adar 13th, is coming. It was months away. But the king said, hey, listen, Esther, I'm giving you the authority to write a counter decree. And the counter decree allowed for the people to do what? Fight back. That's right. And so when they fought back, they didn't fight back on their own. God was with them. And they prepared. And when that day came, there was not a genocide. But there was a redemption that took place. We read through these scriptures, and like I said, it's 10 chapters. It's not very long. But sometimes we go through these scriptures and we read them and we think, wow, this happened and then that happened and then this happened. And we think that everything is just moving really quickly. And as I was studying this, I saw this happened in the third year. This happened in the seventh year. This happened in the 12th year. And you begin to understand the amount and the length of time that took place in this story that we're reading. The first few chapters take place in 12 years. And then the last couple chapters take place in just a couple. Maybe even close to a year. Why do I bring that up? Because sometimes we're in situations or sometimes we're walking through things and we're saying, where are you, God? And what are you doing? Are you going to do anything here? And he's saying, I am. Remember those fingerprints? I am working behind the scenes. There were things that he had to resolve within the heart of Esther. There were things within Mordecai. There were things that we saw going on with Haman. All of these things took place. And God never left. He never abandoned them. He was always there honoring the covenant that he had made. I will be your God and you will be my people. And because I'm your God, I will take care of you. Yes, I see the decree. I see what they're trying to do, but it won't happen. Trust me. Trust me. I don't know what you're facing this morning, but I know that he is the fourth man in the fire. I know that he works all things together for good, even when they don't feel good. I know that he has not left you, he has not abandoned you, and he is with you. When you go through the fire, it's not going to burn you. When you're in the flood and the waters are rising, it's not going to overcome you. What's going to happen is he's going to go through it with you. You're going to walk through some things. But the thing about it is, it's not in you, but it's in him. And he's saying, hey, I see you, and I am with you. And the testimony of this is you're going to go through some yucky things. You're going to go through some hard things. You're going to go through some confusing things. But it's not going to leave a mark when I'm done with the story. Because God redeems everything. Everything. And whatever you do today, I want you to remember there is hope in him. There is hope in what he is doing. Sometimes that well played out plan that we have, that well thought out life, isn't going to script. And the best thing you can do is let go. Yes. And say, God, have your way. Do what only you can do. And it's hard. It's hard. I imagine the struggle of Queen Esther. The struggle of being in the palace for years. The comfort that she gained from such a life. And then the moment when she had to put everything on the line. Whatever you're at, whatever you're facing, if he's asking you to put it on the line, you can put it on the line trusting and knowing that he's on the throne, he's in control, and he will redeem it. Stand with me this morning.